At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. Sarah, it's Friday. We've never taped this late before.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not your
fault.
This is everything is just off today. Like, you had work stuff. I had doctor's appointments. I think I had food poisoning last night. I have been under the weather. I didn't even write a newsletter today.
Oh.
I wrote like 3,000 words of a newsletter.
You know, I knew something.
There was a hole in your day where I just sat right in front of your email like a rat for a pellet and it never came.
Hey, wait, so, can I tell you what I did today?
Yeah, tell me.
The reason that I had to push it back was us taping the focus group pod with one Dana Bash, which is cool because she moderated the debate with Joe Biden and Donald Trump that caused Joe Biden to drop out. And obviously there's a lot of discussion now about the ABC moderation, and I was excited for her take on it. And if you too are excited for her take, you can listen to the podcast
tomorrow. Was she candid with you?
She was.
Wow, that surprises me.
Yeah.
That surprises me a lot.
Yeah, she had a thought. She had some thoughts and feelings. I will say, she asked me what I thought about it. And so I'm interested in what you thought about it, because I would say I have had a little bit of an evolution on this because the night of when they did the first fact check, which I want to say, I think the first one was on the like they do not just kill
the first one
babies.
Was on the abortion. Right.
Yeah.
Because Trump said there are states where Democratic governors let you kill the babies, murder the babies in the 8th, 9th month and even after they've been born.
Right. And they said the correction was there are no states in which you are able to murder the babies after they are born.
Yeah. There are no states in which babies may be killed after delivery.
That's right. So I was like, oh, my gosh, they fact checked him. Do my ears deceive me? What could this be? And so I was pretty amped because it feels good when a liar is said to be lying. And I think our souls cry out for that in this moment. And yet, on the path of fact-checking lies peril. Not simply the reaction to it, which obviously, because it was such a firm and complete, devastating rout of Donald Trump, his sycophants had nothing to do but howl at the refs. And so
fact check.
Yes.
Byron York actually wrote the night of the debate that it was a triumph for Trump and that he had shown that Kamala Harris was a candidate of aspirations while he was a candidate of actions.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Byron York, man, I got to tell you. It does take talent. It takes talent to get your head that far up. You got to do the work. Byron's doing the work.
You don't actually. It's very easy. We're going to have a whole section on Byron later on in the show. Okay, so I'm sorry. I just wanted to be snotty.
That is one of the voices that I enjoy. I don't like
Byron York, Kermit the Frog.
I do enjoy that
one. Oh, the glorious lost cause.
I think that
I like to play the mandolin.
Are you going to do it now or like during the Byron York part?
Sorry. Okay. I may just do the whole show as Byron.
It's funnier if you do know what Byron sounds like in real life, because you can see that that's a pretty good impression. So what did you think? I want to know what you think.
Finish your evolution.
Well, I do think that if you're going to fact check, you know, you can't get anything even remotely a little bit a squidge wrong. And I don't think that Trump was trying to push back around the FBI statistics on crime. And I think if I were them, I might have let that one be from a fact check standpoint. The two fact checks that I thought were really dead on were the you can't kill a baby just wantonly after it is born.
It's not a thing that happens.
That's not a thing that happens. And then two, the fact that they had called, right? Like it is an ongoing point of issue about whether or not they are eating the cats and dogs in Springfield, Ohio. And so the fact that they called and just were like, hey, this thing real? And were prepared with some reporting. I thought that seemed to be the purview of moderators. I think the one about crime is just a little bit gray. And I think there's a question about what the role of moderators are. Okay. And I would love to hear your take on this. Where is it, are they meant to be in that moment? Because in many other cases, they must push back in their jobs as journalists. Like it is incumbent upon them.
And many of the other times they should push back.
Right.
They don't always.
Right. But so the question is when you are basically the stand-in for the voters to facilitate a conversation, to illuminate the back and forth, like is it the role of the moderators to fact check, or is it incumbent upon the other candidate in the debate to respond and fact check? And I would say my evolution is that I don't think it's an unreasonable position. There's a reason that the moderators, as a rule, do not fact check.
So, I mean, can we stipulate that there is a, like, I know pornography when I see it aspect to this? Can we stipulate that? That there are levels of lies.
That's a legitimate position to hold.
Right. And so candidate X saying that Governor Smith has the worst judgment of anybody I've ever seen is not a statement that should be fact-checked because that falls under the realms of normal political rhetoric, right?
Yes.
It would be not helpful to fact-check and say, actually, sir, you did see this other candidate 5 years ago who was a much worse liar. Isn't he worse? There are normal levels of exaggeration which are part of the way that things are understood, the way that normal people can understand conversations about this.
Yes.
And there are the kinds of exaggerations which are murky enough that, you know, could you, like, really fact check something? Somebody says, my economic plan will, you know, 14 economists have said it'll produce the most economic growth of any place. We could try to really litigate that and get that down. But this is sort of a nebulous claim, right? There are enough qualifiers behind it. It's, you know, it is like saying Sammy's Pizza is the best pizza in the city.
Yeah.
You can't actually fact check. There are other claims which are more outlandish and are quite easy to fact check, such as Bigfoot is standing over there in the corner of the room. You people on camera just can't see it.
Sure.
Which would be a thing that a moderator could say, no, sir, there is no Sasquatch over in the corner. We could pan the cameras over to look at it if that helps the audience. At the root of this question, I always get down to, who do the news institutions work for? And when you get into questions about like the fact-checking slippery slope, that view tends to wind up aligned with the idea that the news institutions really work for the candidates and that their job is to treat the candidates fairly. And I just reject that. I don't think they work for the candidates. Treating the candidates fairly is part of a news institution's portfolio, but is not, in fact, its job. Its job, to the extent it has one, is to help its audience clearly perceive reality. That's its job, is to work for the audience.
So can I just, so hold on a second, because I agree with this, and I made this argument around like the Dispatch when you're doing analysis. I'm asking specifically in the role of moderation.
Yeah, I believe that in moderation too. People are like, oh, they fact-checked Trump. They fact-checked Trump 4 times. I mean, if you sat there with a highlighter and the transcript, a actual fact-check of Trump could have been like 50 different things long, right? But there were 4 things he said, one of which was the abortions, where he said that this is happening in the country. It simply isn't. There's another thing where he said this thing's happening in Springfield. It isn't. The thing where he said that crime is skyrocketing everywhere. It just isn't. And then the 4th one was about the election, where he said he did win. And they said, no, you didn't.
Right.
And I think that, again, this is
I would have given those 3. But here's, let me.
This is like, I know it when I see it. Definition.
Yeah,
like,
I look at that and I think. I'm going to make
you so mad. God, oh boy.
Make you so mad. I'm going to make the audience so mad. She repeated one of my least favorite talking points that is not true, which is that Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath, as though it was in the context of political violence. He didn't say that. And they didn't fact check her on that.
So, absolutely. I mean, if we wanted to go 10 rounds, we could go 10 rounds on this. And I think I could probably establish that even Trump's explanation for why he said that it was taken out of context was wrong. But whatever. Let's just be super careful. But the point is, on the standard of like the way that people talk about rhetoric, that falls in line with the other 50 things Trump said that were incorrect, that were not like Sasquatches in the corner. You people just can't see him.
That's true. I will say.
Do you get what I'm saying? Because again, there were another 50 things of that that Trump did. When Trump said that crime is falling everywhere else in the world, I'm sorry, that's not true.
Sure.
That is not true that crime is falling everywhere else in the world. They didn't fact check that, right? This is, you know.
Yeah, and he was wrong about, I don't know, whatever, German energy. You're right that there were things. Let me just throw this at you, okay? So let's say that their job is also to make it look not just the perception, but to like be fair. You want the voters, because see, here's the thing, and this does come down to like, what is the role of a moderator? And to the extent that it is, I don't think they are the stand-in I don't think their job is to be fair to the candidates. I think their job is to be a stand-in for the voters. They're trying to extract information so that voters can make a good choice, right? Or can make an informed choice so that they can see these candidates up close, because good is completely subjective. So I don't mean good. I think if that's their role, then, you know, it does feel a little bit like putting the thumb on the scale to do 4 fact checks on one person and 0 on the other. And I feel
the other
like
the person didn't say that.
I know
that abortions were being. I mean, this is what I'm saying. Like,
of course,
you know,
he's lying more, but it does.
But different types of lies.
Here's the thing. I would say one of my some of my revision has to do with I have some that I think are just objectively thinking about, like, what is the role of these moderators? And also like how useful, not useful, but like how good is fact-checking even when it's well-intentioned in this particular context. But my other one, and maybe the one that's driving me toward my reevaluation, is that, you know, Hugh Hewitt, who is a hack among hacks, was on Fox saying basically America's going through, there's a flag on the play. And what is it called in football? What is the term he used?
Review.
It's under review. So the debate results, who won, who lost, was under review by the American people. And that they were going to reverse the play or reverse the call on the play. And his reasoning was that people felt like it was that the thumb was on the scale against Trump. Now, I'm sure everybody's mad listening to me say this. However, I think that in the swing voter focus groups that I did, nobody thought that. Nobody thought that the morning after. But this is one of those justifications that I watch seep into voters all the time, where what they come away with actually, because the dominant conversation becomes around the moderators and the fact that they fact-checked Trump and the fact that they didn't fact-check Kamala Harris, the extent to which in a pretty wide swath of normie-ish voters, there still is like an antenna up for people being unfair to Trump, especially the media. And I'm worried that it is negating that it will ultimately end up sort of, not completely negating, but in some way eroding what was a masterful performance, because people are like, yeah, but the moderators. Now, the moderators didn't make him say they're eating dogs and cats. The moderators didn't make him, completely melt down. And they didn't make her perform exceptionally well. So I think that the moderators is a major dodge for what we saw. Don't get me wrong. But I watch the way that the conversation is happening, and I'm wondering if it was worth it to have the moderators as opposed to just like a clean defeat.
I wanna push back very hard on this.
Okay.
First of all, tell me the last time Hugh Hewitt analyzed any event.
I'm not agreeing with said Hugh that Hewitt. I'm talking about how the narrative is. Okay.
Listen. I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
Analyzed any event and said that it was probably net bad for Republicans. That is not a thing he has ever done. In Hugh Hewitt's oeuvre, everything is up. The Democrats are always about to overplay their hand. The wheels are falling off the cart. Everybody out there in real America understands that the Republicans are winning. We're going to a whole book about this. Paint the map red, with the subtitle of which is, you know, if you win so big, they can't cheat or something like that. And this, he wrote this in the midst of a period of electoral dominance, the likes of which America has not seen since the aftermath of the Civil War. Republicans have won one national popular majority since 1989. It is a stunning losing streak. So Hugh is always going to say something about how everything was great. And so if there had been no fact checking, there'd just be something else. There'd be some other talking point about how, see, well, this is actually Trump did great. And, and they would just repeat it over and over again.
So I agree with that.
And so at that point, why not have the actual fact checking so that anybody with eyes to see, there were, 67 million, 68 million people who watched it, can just like, okay, I'm sorry that it is there. And if the answer is that like the discourse around it and the information warfare waged around it winds up helping Donald Trump because he's got people like you, Hewitt, out there just willing to just lie and say things because that's what they do. That's their mode of production. Then like, okay, at least we're getting there with where people don't have an excuse to say, well, I didn't know that that wasn't true. Because there's always going to be something. Always. Had there been zero fact checks in that debate, would Hugh Hewitt be saying, boy, Donald Trump really got his clock cleaned? I expect Kamala Harris to be up by 7.
You're getting too hung up on the Hugh Hewitt thing. I was just using Hugh Hewitt as an example of, I think his analysis where he is saying that there is a, it's under review.
But that's not analysis.
Isn't totally wrong.
That's not
I think
analysis.
It's not totally wrong that the amount of, and this, here's what I disagree with, and I'll tell you what I do agree with. I think that the analysis that the American people in a few days out from an election where the conventional wisdom and everybody who saw it with their own eyes was like, that was a disaster for Trump, that they are successfully shifting the conversation among sort of the persuadable, like, I'm concerned about it. I will say it's sort of like the way that they were like, the election was stolen. Trump says it. His biggest sycophants say it, and like over time, it like suddenly much more normal people are saying it.
Yeah,
and so I guess I just hate there being anything for them to hold on to.
There is no perfection.
But to your point,
there'll always be something.
Now, I don't know what it would be if it wasn't to blame the moderators.
Let me tell you. I have the answer to this because, again, I've been reading everything Byron York has written for like the last 20 years. And so,
do you want to use this to transition into Byron York?
We don't have to.
So, no, you said we were going to.
Well, we can. But there may be more to talk about on this. On the night of the debate, Byron York wrote about how tremendous Trump was and that he was a man of action and that, boy, you know, it was just wild. That was his whole thing, right? 2 days later, he writes another piece of analysis on the debate in which he says that actually, even though the media tried to help Harris, she absolutely collapsed on the single most important issue of the debate. And like, that's going to destroy her campaign.
And what was that? The economy?
It was the are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And he spends like 500 words taking apart. Here's the thing. If that is true, that she had flubbed the single most important question in the debate, then Byron would have written that the night of the debate. But he didn't, because that wasn't what Tim Murtaugh had told him. Tim Murtaugh told him Donald Trump was a man of action. And so Byron went and wrote that.
Sure.
And then 2 days later, as they were looking around for another handhold, he decided, actually, you know, we did have this one incredibly important question and she got killed on that. So this is what I'm saying. There's always a handhold. There's always, there is no perfect. It's not like there's no world in which you could construct one of these things at the end of which Byron York and Hugh Hewitt would say, shit, yeah, our guy got his clock cleaned.
Yeah, I guess
that's not possible.
Here's what I wonder. So this is why I like the Secret Podcast, because I've been kind of like turning this over in my head.
I'm sorry, one more thing, because I'm so mad, which is what makes them different from us. Because when Joe Biden collapsed on stage of the debate, we sat around and said, holy shit, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
We
no,
don't
I,
do that. And
no,
we're
I agree
all
with that.
Rooting for Joe Biden, you know.
Yeah.
Like
this no, I agree
is
with
like
that.
We do actual analysis.
Correct.
These guys do deal in propaganda, and propagandists are going to propagandize.
Wait. Will you say, why do you think that what I thought Jake and Dana did, I thought they did a fine job. I do remember, so I thought they did a good job moderating. I do remember being frustrated by the order of the questions, because I felt like the question, like, it was like an hour in before we were talking about January 6th.
Yep.
But you know, she and I talk about this on the pod. Again, I'm not going to give away how it went, or what was said, because you should go listen to it. But it was pretty interesting to hear how they thought about it.
Yeah. So I'd have to go back through my notes, like with the specific criticisms. I didn't like the way they handled the debate. I thought the questions were poorly thought out and poorly presented. I thought that they should have fact-checked Trump. None of that would have mattered, because Biden blew up on stage and had a health event.
Yeah,
so
none of this
matters. But the other thing that does matter is like, I think people don't understand that at the level of a presidential debate, the moderators are just the tip of the spear, and behind them is an entire institution, which comprises of like news directors and reporters and executives and people in the C-suite. Like, that is an institutional decision how to handle these things. And it's not the moderators get a say in it, but they are part of a gigantic institution making those decisions. And that's why I wouldn't say like Jake and Dana were disgraces. Like, I just think that the institutional decisions made by CNN on that debate were bad. That's how I would phrase it.
So.
reasonable? Could you agree with that?
No, I do not agree with it. Okay, fair. I think that, in, but I am, I was, she really got me thinking about it, because I will say my reflexes, my instincts watching the debate were to be thrilled by the fact checking. But because I like to check my own impulses, because I do very much have a dog in the fight, and because it matters to me how I feel like the voters perceive how they came to the information, I've been thinking about it, and I'm thinking about two things. I've been thinking about whether, in a perfect world, do I wish they hadn't fact-checked him, but it's hard for me to actually reverse engineer it, because she really found her stride after that first fact check. Like, it was on the abortion answer, right, that she, like, really started to break away. And I do wonder if it, like, built her confidence. And so, like, it's hard to know what the counterfactual is if, like, they just let him say that. Because she also could have been like, that doesn't happen. But from an
audience perspective,
yeah.
Do you think your middle-of-the-road audience person is likely to perceive reality more because Kamala Harris, the other politician, says the thing doesn't happen, or because a moderator says it doesn't happen?
I made this exact point. I made this exact point sort of back, that, like, the thing about the moderators doing it, because I'm arguing with you. I took a little bit of the other side in the other conversation. Ben, and one of the things that I said was, like, you know, if it's about the audience is going to take what a politician says. When they say the other guy's lying, they will take that with a huge grain of salt.
Yeah.
As opposed to when the sort of more neutral party there, which is the moderators, when they say it. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, then, you though they'll want to be very protective of that perception of neutrality.
Yes.
And so I wonder, and this is my second question, is if you asked me in the future, would we like the moderators to fact check the candidates during a debate? I'm not sure I'd say yes.
I mean, again, these things are all shades of gray. In my perfect world,
yeah,
every single phrase uttered by candidates on stage at a debate would be like, okay, pause. We're like, the debate would take 9 hours, and every single thing would be litigated.
They better because start I think them debates at noon, are stupid. Then. Because starting them at 9 o'clock at night is not
ruins
cool.
My week.
There's a good 30 Rock meme where, you know, they're like, I'll see you at 9. And she's like, in the evening? Like, what?
Yeah.
That is how I felt when I found it. It started at 9 p.m. and not at 8 p.m., yeah. Especially when we're going to do a live stream after. Although I will say, I was so pumped in the post-game.
You were ready to run through walls.
I wanted to just, and I think that there's been enough debate analysis of the actual performance that I don't think we need to do a lot of it. And we've been doing it all week. So I thought the moderator question was sort of more interesting. But
yeah, I would have more rather than less, but here's the, you know, it gets to when a jury is convened, right? The standard is typically is there reasonable doubt, right? And I think what you want to get to is, could a reasonable person watch a debate and think that the moderators were basically fair? And that is a subjective question, but, like, we deal with subjective things like the reasonable doubt standard all the time in life. And I don't see why we can't do it here, right? I mean, and I think the ABC moderators, I think most reasonable people watching that would have said, yeah, it was fine.
Well, I will say, in the swing voter group that we did directly after, and I've already tweeted this, so producers get so mad when I give away focus group pod content on all the other channels. But they thought it was great that the moderators were fact checking. Yeah. They were happy to see it. I would like to check back with that same group in a week, though. Just, I'm, like, genuinely curious whether
that's the power of propaganda, right?
they still believe that, or after like they've had enough conversations with people in their world who are like, yeah, but the moderators, if that like starts to move.
That's the power of propaganda. That's why actually
I could go the other way.
Trust the first. Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Because that's there's no doubt she smoked him. And I do just want to say, as a cap on the week, since hopefully we get this out for people to have their cocktails or their Friday evening. It was a tremendous performance from her. Like, as the week goes on, because I've now watched much of it, like at the time, it's 90 minutes and it's coming at you fast. And he's a maniac and, you know, you're talking sometimes, so you're missing what they're saying. And so I've rewatched a bunch of it. Like, she's magnificent. He is actively terrible and she is actively good. Like, the gap between their performances cannot be overstated.
It's pretty bad. I mean, when Britt Hume is sitting around with his head in his hands, it should tell you something.
Oh, Barry did a supercut of the Fox News analysis directly after, and it's some funny stuff. You should go check it out. Yeah. And then he's like, I need my Binky, Sean Hannity, and Laura. it's so pathetic. Hey, Tim asked us this question. So I was on CNN this morning with Philippe Reynes, is how you pronounce his name, apparently. I didn't know. I would have called him Philip Reynes, but it is Philippe Reynes. And so he was telling us both, he did a bunch of stuff on the air, but even off the air, he was telling us about, he played Donald Trump in the debate prep. And he was like telling us what it was like. And we, one of the questions we all had was like, do you think there'll be a third debate?
I'm sorry, did he do Trump debate prep for Harris or for Clinton?
Both.
Oh, he did for both? Oh, that's so interesting.
He played Donald Trump for Hillary Clinton, and then he played it for Kamala Harris. That's and it was interesting. He'd never met Kamala Harris. And so he came at it like totally fresh. And she didn't know him. Unlike Hillary Clinton, he actually said something funny. Yeah. He's like, I'd known Hillary forever. And so, you know, she was already enormously bothered by me. and so I brought that energy to this. He's like, but Kamala didn't know me at all. And so I just, you know, began spewing insane things. And he's watched... It's interesting to listen to him, like, to get in that mindset. He just watches rally after speech after insane thing. And so, like, he did a really good job at prepping her. But he also said she was, like, really good at, like, picking up the material, like, understand. Like, and so he said, like, a lot of the things that, like, he just – Trump says the same things over and over again. And apparently he's gotten much worse. Like, he says since he played him for the Clinton debate to now – like that Trump's cognitive ability, like the extent to which now he's so repetitive, so says the same things. He's like, it actually wasn't that hard to be like, he's going to say this. like this idea that like you got the questions in advance. It's like, nope, Trump says the same things over and over and over again. And so it's less that she was prepared for the moderator's questions and much more that she was prepared for what Trump was going to say on every topic because he says the same crap over and over again. And so they had prepped for it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the moderator's questions were all exactly what you would expect.
Yeah.
They were the questions that you would expect to get in September of this presidential race. And to not be ready for them would have been malpractice. And she was ready. She clearly intakes information at a rapid rate. She's very facile with it and has very quick recall. I mean, you know, she's only, what, 59 or 60?
Like, she's like, yeah, I think she's 60.
She is a young person.
It makes me feel good that I can be 60 and, like, be considered a young politician. Because I feel like if I'm going to run, you know.
That's what's going to happen for you.
You think I'm going to peak? I want to peak at 60.
60.
That's what I want. No, I want that to be the height of my power.
Peak at 78. That's when you want to peak. Sure. No, but she did a very good job. And, you know, she was a prosecutor. She did do pretty good when questioning people when she was a senator. Like she.
Oh, but can I just say what I was getting at before why I brought up Philippe Reynes, which is we were talking about whether or not there'd be a third debate. And Scaramucci said on MSNBC, one of them, that he was like, he's going to do a third debate. And Reynes said sort of the same thing, like he's going to. Right now, he's just negotiating for terms, right? Like, he's trying to make it so that, I can't remember what strategy this is, maybe like wrestling or something like this, where you...
Yeah, so that you don't actually want the debate. The other person is the one who wants it, so they have to give.
That's right. Right. And so you can get it on Fox News, basically.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
I mean, honestly, from her perspective, she also has the correct strategy, which is to say, yeah, I want a debate, when the truth is she doesn't need another one.
Yeah, if you're her.
If you're her, you actually don't want another one, probably.
What's it going to be better and than so, that? How?
And right. And so, you know, her posture on this can be to call his bluff on this, where, you know, he can say, I want to be on Fox News. And be like, I'm going to fucking go on Fox News.
Yeah, one of the stupidest things that I saw is this. There's somebody who was like, did you know that Lindsay Davis, one of the other moderator, is sorority sisters with Kamala Harris? And I was like, whoa. That's interesting. Did they?
She doesn't look very old at all.
They were in the same sorority at the same time, and then it was like, no, they were 10 years apart at different schools, just like part of the same thingamabob. I don't even know that much, like the whatever the letters are. They had the same ones of those. So silly.
I got some dirt on her, actually.
Lindsay Davis. Would you like to hear
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So my best friend. Went to high school with her. She was a couple of years behind.
Mm.
And she was one of the super cool, super pretty popular girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the orchestra together. And she, I think, played flute. And he was, you know, my friend. He's like me. So, you know, Chris is a much cooler version of me. But, you know, like, look what we're working with here, right? Not super cool, popular crowd. And he was in the clarinet section. And he remembers that Lindsay was always super nice to the nerds in the clarinet section.
Oh.
It's like, yeah, she was really, you know, she was like this golden child and she was like super nice to us and, you know, the nerds in the clarinet.
Oh, so there. That's great.
There's something to know about her, which tells you all you need to know about how the fix was in.
That's right. You know, people won't remember what you say, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
That's true.
Which is why I try to make you feel bad all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. So what else? What else you got going on?
Are there other things from this week? Do your Byron York thing. I want to hear it.
Oh, I'm. You know, I just decided to write about Byron because after Tim's thing. Hey, Sarah, do you know there's actually more of the show?
Oh, yeah. There is? How much more?
There's more. So much more. All of the more. It goes on for hours. If people want to get the rest of the show, you know what they have to do, right?
I think they have to go to Bowler Plus. Do they have to subscribe? What do they have to do?
Yes, they have to pay us money.
Oh. Good.
Pay that man his money. And go to thebulwark.com and subscribe to become a member of Bulwark Plus.
All the good stuff's on the other side.
Bye.